Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. This is episode 3 of the Geek Speak podcast, of which you can download at http://geekspeak.typepad.com. Yeah, every now and then it's fun to say the full thing, because nobody ever says that anymore, you know? Back in the day, that used to be what everybody had to say, but that's pretty much been replaced over the years. But nevertheless, I am Ian Levenstein, and this is going to be the last live Geek Speak for the next 2 weeks. This one I'm doing live here from the studio, but as soon as I am done recording this episode of Geek Speak, I'll be recording next week's episode, because we got a huge break in next week's episode. I was lucky enough to have an interview with Phil Jimenez of DC Comics back in May of this year. Might have actually been late April, my mistake. But I got an interview with him back then, and I just got done talking with him about a day ago about being able to air the full interview in its entirety on GeekSpeak, and he gave me the okay. So a day after Infinite Crisis number one hits the stands, you'll be hearing a complete interview with Phil Jimenez here on Geek Speak. So it'll be a pretty good quality recording, because I'll be doing it here at the studio as soon as I'm done recording today's episode, and you'll hear that next week. So until then, you got to put up with the regular episode. Sorry, folks. What's going on today in today's show? Well, I'm glad you asked. Today I'm going to be going into the iPod video, which is something that a lot of people want, and I don't really see the point. But then again, I must be behind the times. Also going to be talking about the brand new PowerBooks that Apple's putting out now, that is going to be what they're announcing as opposed to an iPod video at their announcement next week. I'm going to be getting into some movie news as well. I went to see Serenity this past week, and that was outstanding. I'm going to have a nice review of that coming up. Also going to have a review of Corpse Bride, which is another nice little geek film that everybody went to see. Tim Burton's masterpiece, same style as Nightmare Before Christmas, and I think pretty much every geek on the planet loved Nightmare Before Christmas, because that is the ultimate in movies right there. Also, I am going to be getting into, what seems to be one of my favorite topics, not exactly piracy this time around, but I'm going to be talking about clones. Yeah, not Attack of the Clones, but what I am going to be talking about are game system clones. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they exist, folks, and they exist in large quantities, to say the least. Brand new clones of the just released a couple months back PlayStation Portable and Nintendo DS have hit the States, all created in China, of all places. And I'm going to be talking about those, because those are, what's the word? Yeah, pathetic. I mean, it's not even close to the originals, but I'll be getting into that later on. But my lead story here on GeekSpeak is indeed information on the iPod video. Here's the information. It's not happening. A lot of people thought that at this upcoming announcement by Macintosh that they were finally going to announce an iPod video. Now, from what everybody's been telling everybody else, Macintosh's executives, including Steve Jobs, have been very much against an iPod video. They feel it'll be a not-so-profitable investment. They feel that not enough people are behind an iPod video to actually get behind it, and that's why it has not been made yet. Now, instead, they are going to be announcing a new line of PowerBooks at their upcoming information expo type thing that they're doing this upcoming week, and I think that's a better move for them. I mean, a lot of people buy the PowerBooks because those are, quite frankly, the best laptops in the market, period. I mean, I know that friends of mine have iBooks and they absolutely love them, and obviously PowerBooks are just the advanced version of the iBooks, and it's probably going to work for them. Now, the iPod video, I pretty much agree with Steve Jobs. I think it's a very, very tricky investment. With an iPod video, obviously, what you'll be able to do with an iPod video is, well, play videos. Yeah, probably similar to the way the PlayStation Portable plays videos. You'll be able to download MP4s and put them onto your iPod. Now, these videos, if you're going to watch an entire movie, this just in, that is a lot of space. And I mean a lot of space. Now, an iPod, a top-of-the-line iPod this day and age, will give you about 60 gigs worth of hard drive space. A bottom-of-the-line iPod, in my opinion, a lot of people are calling this top-of-the-line just because of how small it is, but it is bottom-of-the-line because of how small it is in hard drive space as well. The iPod Nano will give you about, as of now, they're giving 4 gigs or 2 gigs for the iPod Nano. Now, with a 60-gigabyte iPod, you've got a lot of music on there. I mean, MP3 files can be very, very small. They can be about maybe 2 megabytes, 4 megabytes, 6 megabytes, depending on how big the file is. Obviously, better quality equals higher file size. With a video, however, you're pretty much guaranteeing yourself that you're going to have at least a 60 to 80 megabyte file. And if it's a really large video, if it's not like maybe a 10-minute video, then you're going to have a 100 to 200 megabyte file, maybe even more than that as well, like maybe even 300 or 400 megabytes. It all depends on the encoding and the process and how big the actual show is. So let's say, for example, we'll go with maybe System. Now, System tends to have, due to their H.264 encoding, the brand new encoding from QuickTime that they put in their brand new QuickTime, which actually is a very, very effective encoding method. I'm very glad that they actually did it because it does decrease the size and does not decrease the actual quality of the video in the process, which makes me a very happy man. But the main thing with that is that not a lot of people have H.264 right now. But unless you're using something like that, you're probably going to end up with a very, very high megabyte video. In Avi, you're going to run about maybe 300, 400 megabytes. And that's the thing as well. Is this iPod video just going to support a specific type of video? Are they going to do something like what they did with the iPod and make like their version of the ACC format with a video? That's a good question. Because they're certainly not going to let you do free reign here and put all your pirated stuff on there that you got off of TorrentSpy or something like that. This is a legitimate company here. This is Macintosh. Now, they cannot afford to make enemies in the motion picture organizations or in television. So what they're probably going to have to end up doing is actually making those contracts that the PSP made and getting some sort of disc format going or file format going that you'll be able to do it. Now, a lot of people are thinking if they were to actually do an iPod video, it actually would not be video as we know it, but it would be music videos instead. Now, the thing is with music videos is that, well, quite frankly, not everybody will watch music videos. Not everybody is addicted to MTV the way that the world thinks everybody is addicted to MTV. Because it's just not the way things work. I mean, I haven't watched MTV in years now. I mean, you know, I'll watch the occasional, like if they're showing Beavis and Butthead on MTV2, I'll turn it on. But I can't stand the videos that are on there. I mean, and a lot of the music that they play on there, I don't like either, but then again, that's my personal preference. But from what I know, a lot of people do actually share my personal preference on this, and they will not watch a lot of music videos. So to do an iPod video and have your main form of video be music videos, that is a very, very costly investment there. Now, it's one thing to add video to the iTunes Music Store and make, you know, available, being able to get music videos in MP and, you know, maybe MP4 format or something along those lines. But to actually make an entire iPod based off of video, I don't know about that, folks. I really, really don't. That is a very costly investment. And if I am Macintosh, I think twice. And that's exactly what they've been doing so far. That's why they have not made it yet. Will somebody else step up and make one while they do not make one? That's certainly a good question. That is certainly a good question. Now, I would think maybe somebody like Sony would try and step up and actually make that format for themselves. But then again, Sony is pretty much behind the times now. I mean, they're first trying to make a successful MP3 player now. They're testing it out in the Japanese market, and if it does good there, they're going to bring it over to the States. I hope it does good because I love Sony products. I mean, I absolutely love my Walkman. Got a Walkman which plays MP3 CDs. See, I'm a little behind the times. I don't really need a MP3 player that much, so I just make myself CDRWs with my podcasts on it and maybe a couple of MP3s when I'm traveling and set myself up like that. You know, all I need is really 700 megabytes worth of music in one sitting. A lot of people need more than that for some reason. Why, I may not ever know. I mean, how hard is it to just take out a CD and put in a new one? Seriously, folks. But nevertheless, I'm not saying anything bad about anybody who has iPods. A lot of people do enjoy them. They're just not for me. That's the way things go. So if Apple were to make a iPod video, I have a feeling it will be a long time from now. Not going to be anytime soon. Also going on in the world of tech, interesting event happening very, very soon at the Javits Center here in New York City. Now, this was just announced. TiVo is going to be having an event at the Javits Center where they're going to be giving away free TiVo units. Yeah, that's right. Free TiVo units. What's the catch? Well, obviously, you'll have to subscribe to TiVo once you buy it because, I mean, they give you a free unit. That saves you a little bit of money, but that's it, you know? But the huge thing about this is that they are doing a mock funeral for the VCR. Now, this information was posted on Gizmodo.com, just to give them the plug here. Here's the story from Gizmodo that was posted on Wednesday. TiVo puts nail in VCR's coffin, literally. Nothing like bringing a metaphor to life, huh, TiVo? Seems the company has decided to display its vim and vigor by staging an interesting event at the October 14th opening of New York City's Digital Life Technology and Entertainment Show, sort of featuring a mock funeral. TiVo is encouraging anyone who may still have an old VCR tape laying around to come on in and trade it in for a free TiVo box. Just toss that old episode of Quantum Leap in the VHS casket. Hey, come on, I like Quantum Leap, which will include an old VCR with blinking 12 o'clock, and you can walk away with a brand new DVR. And to make it even weirder, there will be a eulogy and speakers sharing their personal memories of the VCR. Now remember, folks, that's as supplies last. So get over there and start tossing your tapes. Starts at noon on Friday, October 14th at the Crystal Lobby of the Jacob Javits Center. So once again, that's from Gizmodo.com. And this is an interesting tactic for TiVo. Now, TiVo has been in the financial troubles for some time now. They just got themselves out of the red a while back, and they're not really making too much of a profit. I mean, they're an effective company. It's just it takes a lot of money to actually make the sort of equipment that they're doing. So TiVo might not have too much of a shelf life left. So what do? You do events like this. You do these silly events that a lot of people might think are just for show. You give away your free TiVo box. You hook people on the service, and they sign up. But I'm warning you, folks. You sign up with TiVo, you sign up with TiVo. They recently announced that you're pretty much going to need a year subscription with TiVo. And if you break that agreement and stop using TiVo, you're going to have to pay for it. Now, I don't see why you would want to stop using TiVo because it is a very, very productive product. And I myself am still in the VHS generation. I have a combo VHS-DVD player at home, a RCA, which actually is a very, very effective DVD-VCR. But I do not have a TiVo. And this might be an event where I actually go out there and get myself a TiVo because free is a damn good price. But again, it's not entirely free because you're just getting a free unit. Remember that, folks. This is not free TiVo service because how would they possibly make money on that? But it's an interesting gimmick, especially doing it at an electronics expo like this. It's a good call. Having the speakers, that's a little fun as well. And I might give it a shot because I want TiVo. Seriously, I'm missing it. And my life would be so much easier if I didn't have to go from VHS tape to VHS tape to tape that latest episode of Lost. And also, it takes less downloading time, too, when I forget to tape it. Switching over to the video game side of things. So, everybody loves the PSP. Everybody loves the Nintendo DS. But, you know what that means? Well, there's obviously going to begin an influx of Nintendo DS and PSP clones. Yeah. The Nintendo DS and the PSP are very, very, very popular right now. So what do? They make themselves those clones, thinking that if somebody is actually stupid enough to say, hey, it's a fake Nintendo DS, maybe my kid won't notice. Maybe he'll think that I went out and got him a really cool machine to play when we're on the go. Maybe he'll actually think that. Well, I got news for you. And no freaking way is anybody ever going to get fooled by these sort of things. See, I say that because I look at this and my ears are almost bleeding. Looking at this, my eyes are bleeding looking at this. I'll start off with a Nintendo DS ripoff, because this one is hilarious. It's called the Neo Double Games, and it's straight out, it was spotted in Spain, but the actual Neo Double Games, I believe it's actually the Neo Double Games 2 now, is a Chinese clone of the Nintendo DS. Now, this is not a system where you get to play one game on two screens, because no, that's what the Nintendo DS is. Instead, this is two games that you switch off. So let's say you want to play Street Fighter. So you've got your Street Fighter on the top screen, and you got your soccer waiting on the bottom. If you want to start playing soccer, then you take out the Street Fighter, you take it out screen and all, and you replace it with the next one. Now, you would think, wow, this would be a really, really effective thing if the graphics didn't suck, if the gameplay wasn't pathetic. But, yeah. Guess what? The graphics suck, and the gameplay's pathetic. Remember when you were a kid and used to have those little Tiger games that were portable, that you used to be able to take around with you when you're, you know, when you're on the go? Pretty much the precursor to the, you know, the Game Boy and that sort of stuff. Well, these graphics, dare say, are worse than those. Yeah. It's that bad, folks. And to top it all off, the soccer game is the second game in this set. And the Street Fighter is the first one. So when you take out the Street Fighter and put in the soccer, you'd expect to start playing soccer, right? And no. Instead, you get Street Fighter with all the soccer graphics. So you're playing absolutely nothing. Yeah, that's pretty much it. You're playing absolutely nothing. Because that is called a ripoff, folks. There's really no other way to put it. Anybody who is stupid enough to go out there and buy one of these, unless they're for the aesthetic value of saying, hey, I have a clone of a popular system, look how bad it is, they're out of their minds. And the Nintendo DS one is not the only one either. The Pocket Station, I believe it's called. Or the Pop Station. There we go. The Pop Station Portable. That's the PSP. Wow, amazing. Pop Station Portable is pretty much the PSP version of the Nintendo DS ripoff that I was just talking about. And this one actually has both those games that I previously mentioned in one package. But it's pretty much as bad. You know, no increase in graphics or anything like that. It's just terrible. Terrible is the best way to put it. When I see this, I want to break out weeping. It is that bad. Now, it looks just like a PSP. But it's not, obviously. And most of the buttons on the system, you don't actually end up using. They're pretty much there for show, just to make it look even more like a PSP. You're only going to end up using maybe like two buttons on this whole thing. The analog is not there. The most of the, you know, triangle and square buttons, you're not going to end up using. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're out there waiting to get your child a gift for the holiday season, and you see at a 99-cent store the Pop Station Portable, remember, it's a 99-cent store for a reason. If you're down in Mexico and you see a Pop Station Portable, remember, it's not just the Mexican version of the PlayStation, because that's just sad if you actually believe that. No, it's a clone, and it's a bad one. So, I very much hope they're happy, because they're going to get at least some idiots buying these. But everybody else will look at it, and their eyes will pretty much bleed. Time for my first foray into movies here on GeekSpeak. Start things off with The Corpse Bride. Now, The Corpse Bride is Tim Burton's brand new movie in the same style as The Nightmare Before Christmas, which was a very, very fun movie. It was done completely with little figures, and it was animated that way. Sort of the same way that Robot Chicken is done, only obviously much better quality. And serious, as opposed to Robot Chicken. But The Corpse Bride is his brand new one, done in the exact same style. It's been years since Nightmare Before Christmas came out, and now he's finally coming out with this. Johnny Depp is one of the main voices in it. Tracy Ullman's in it. And there's a whole bunch of other people in that. In fact, I'm going to bring that up right here on the glorious IMDb. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know you love it. IMDb is one of the best sources out there for all the news that you never need. Helena Bonham Carter played The Corpse Bride. Emily Watson as Victoria Everglot. Tracy Ullman, as I said, as Nell Van Dort and Hildegard. Paul Whitehouse as William Van Dort / Mayhew / Paul the Head Waiter. And a whole bunch of other people in it. Richard E. Grant, Christopher Lee, Michael Gow, Jane Horrocks, and Deep Roy, which is an interesting name, as General Bones Apart. Yeah, very nice play on words there. Instead of Napoleon Bonaparte, Bones Apart. And the whole premise of the movie is that Victor Van Dort, as played by Johnny Depp, gets cold feet and screws up the wedding vows when he's going to marry Victoria Everglot. This is only the wedding rehearsal, though, so, you know, he gets away with it. So he starts roaming the forest until he accidentally slips the ring on the finger of the Corpse Bride. And that's when things go terribly, terribly wrong. He ends up down in the world of the dead, and he meets his own old dog, which is the cutest moment in the movie, definitely, when the little dog pops out and the bones come together as a dog, and he starts until we get to roll over and all that, until finally he says, play dead, and the dog looks at him like, because, you know, dead dog can't really play dead. But it was a very, very fun movie. If you love Nightmare Before Christmas, you will love The Corpse Bride. Now, I've seen it twice already. Saw it once here in New York and once in Massachusetts. And the one thing that ruined the experience for me the second time was that, I'm sure everyone can relate to this, there were a bunch of kids behind me that were not only kicking the chair but talking through the picture. And at one point during the film, now I'm not really giving anything away about this film because it's the sort of film where like you can see everything coming. It's not a really sophisticated film. And again, if you do not want to hear anything about The Corpse Bride, fast forward through this and you won't hear it because, you know, I am going to be giving away some things about this movie. And the big reveal of this movie is that Lord Bacchus, the guy who's trying to marry Victoria, was also the guy who was going to marry The Corpse Bride. And he was also the guy who stood up The Corpse Bride. And when this occurred, the kids behind me, while the movie's going on, say in a very, very loud voice, Hey, that's her husband. That's her husband. And that's when I took my hand, put it on my head, and slapped myself, because that's just sad. All right, you got to control yourself in a movie. Even if you are a kid, even if you are about maybe like 10 or 11, you really need to control yourself. You know, don't give away things, because there are going to be some people that don't get it right off the bat. Let them get it on their own time. So that sort of ruined it the second time that I saw it, but it's still a good movie. The one thing that I did not really like about the movie as much as I liked Nightmare Before Christmas is that the songs didn't flow nearly as well as they did in Nightmare Before Christmas. I mean, sure, they were there, but the songs in general just didn't feel as... Just didn't feel as right as they did in Nightmare Before Christmas. I mean, in a movie like Nightmare, you had all that lovely, lovely music going on. And here, it was there, but it didn't really have any real effect on the movie itself. It was sort of just like, almost like filler. But the movie itself was very, very fun and enjoyable. If you have children, take them to see it. They'll love it. If you're an adult geek, like myself, you'll love it too. And I'll give that movie a 3 out of 5. And now, for Serenity. Serenity Now! Yeah, for those of you who have not seen Serenity, once again, you might want to turn this off right now. Now, for those of you who do not know what Serenity is, that might be maybe 3 people. Serenity was a TV show done by Joss Whedon after he was done with the whole Buffy and Angel thing. And I guess the best way to put it is a space western. That's what it was. And, you know, it was taking place in the future. And these guys were thieves, pretty much. And they went about doing their whole thief thing. Now, the captain of the ship was a former fighter against the Alliance, which pretty much rules the galaxy. Malcolm Reynolds was the guy involved with that. And he eventually becomes the head of the ship, Serenity. And the series itself only lasted 1 season because Fox, being Fox, canceled it way before its time. Yeah, they're good at that. They really are. Wonder Falls, for example, and Serenity. Firefly, that is. And Joss Whedon was able to get a Firefly movie because there were enough Firefly fans out there that wanted to see the rest of this story being told. So Serenity was made. Now, the Serenity movie focuses mostly upon two members of the cast. It's their story, pretty much. Simon and River. Now, anybody who saw Firefly knows that River was the daughter of Simon. Is it the daughter? What am I talking about? No, is the sister of Simon. There you go. That's better. Is the sister of Simon, who was experimented upon, and her brain was pretty much taken apart, put back together, and she was given almost like psychic abilities, and she's fractured mentally, and you can't really trust her too much because you don't know exactly what she's going to end up doing. And Simon, her brother, comes in there, saves her, and they end up on the ship of Firefly. They end up on Serenity. And this movie focuses upon the Alliance trying to get her back because River holds secrets that the Alliance does not want to get out. Now, because of the nature of this movie, I'm not going to give away too much. Like, I'll mention some plot points, but not all of them, because anybody who is listening to this, I'm sure you want to see this if you have not seen it already. And the one thing that I'll say, I'm not going to say who dies, but Joss Whedon made it seem like he really wanted to make sequels for this movie. Now, in order to do that, you sort of need some cast left. Seriously. I mean, there were some deaths in this movie that was very, very surprised actually occurred. Especially the main death in this movie. And it's going to make the dynamic for the next movie, if it's made, very, very different than the Firefly series or even the Serenity movie. Now, the ship is being chased by this one evil dude. Best way to put him. He doesn't actually have a name, which makes him a very, very interesting villain. Because you can't really put a name to the face. And this dude is going after the Firefly crew in order to get River back to him. Now, the big reveal in the movie, I'm not going to say what it is. The big reveal in the movie is perfect. It fits with the show entirely. It makes one gigantic portion of the show feel so validated. And it really freaks me out. Because if my government did something along the lines of what their government did, wow, I'd be pissed. I'm sure I'm making a lot of people wet their whistle right now as I talk about this because they're wondering, what is he talking about? I got to see this movie. See this movie. Honestly. Even if you didn't see Firefly, you'll probably be able to pick up on this pretty well. Not as well as if you had seen Firefly, but I myself actually just picked up the Firefly DVD box set from Amazon for $34, and I'm going to be showing it to my father. So that when I end up getting Serenity on DVD, which I most certainly will, he'll know exactly what happened. The acting is superb. The script is the typical Joss Whedon script in a good way. Lots of real dialogue being said here. And it just feels like it should. It feels like the type of thing that you'd expect from Joss Whedon, but only better. He's got to make more movies of this because I was totally blown away. Now, other people that I went to see, the other person I went to see it with wasn't nearly as impressed with it as I was, but I think it's because she might have been looking for something a little different in the movie. But I found pretty much everything that I was expecting, and I am going to give this a flat out 5 out of 5. Really, I cannot see many flaws with the movie. I'm sure other people probably could, but because I am a Firefly fanboy the way I am, thank you very much, Trisha, for getting me addicted to this. Amazing, amazing movie, and I very much hope that it is a success. It made $10 million in its first week, which isn't stellar, but it was number two in the country. And the numbers make it look like it might very well end up number one in the country come this weekend. So please, be one of those people that makes this movie number one, because you will not regret it. We'll be right back. little addendum to what I just mentioned. As I just found this just now on Dig. Yes, I love Dig so much. The first 9 minutes of Serenity have been put up on the internet by Universal in order for you to get addicted to it and want to see it. Great move by Universal. I'll give you guys the website right now. It's at video.vividus.com/cdni/3929_serenity/web/index.html. That's where you'll be able to see the first 9 minutes of the Serenity movie. So if you're interested, that's a great place to look. Now, I'm going to talk some TV now, and it's not the good kind of TV. This is the sort of TV that really ticks me off. Now, I've mentioned in the past that I have been known to download an episode of a television show every now and then if I forget to tape it on my VCR. But it's basically just a replacement for my VCR. If I can't record something, I'll download it. That's the way it happens. And HBO has begun attacking BitTorrent sites with false data and false connections in order to make it harder for you to download episodes of Rome. Rome, of course, being their very popular new series that I've been watching. And I hope you guys do too, because it's actually a very, very fun TV show. But I'm going to be a little more skeptical about HBO now. What are you saying to the people who would be watching this show if you're trying to completely cut down on their downloading of the show? Now, let's say, for example's sake, that a regular watcher of Rome watches the episode and completely loves it. Let's say it's the first episode, for example. And he wants his friends to get into the show, because he wants to be able to have maybe a viewing party with them every week. So, you know, that's exactly what he does. He downloads the show. And here comes HBO attacking the torrents, making it harder for that to occur. Now, don't you think that this person is probably going to be helping HBO more than he's hurting it? If he's downloading it just so that his friends will watch the show, isn't that a good thing? Last I checked, it was. But apparently HBO thinks differently. Why, I don't know, but that's the way they go. And they're not the only network that thinks this. A lot of people do think that downloading shows off BitTorrent is a bad thing, that it's going to take away from their ratings. But I'm not really in that camp. I'm really not, because a lot of the shows that I end up downloading are indeed shows that I just did not get a chance to tape on my VCR. There are very few shows that I myself will sit down and watch as they're airing. Now, Rome is actually one of the shows that I do sit down and watch when I can. That's recently changed because of Desperate Housewives being back on the air. But I actually end up watching it on HBO West on DirecTV when it comes on at 12 o'clock, I believe it is. So at midnight, I sit down and watch Rome. Now, if I were to ever miss an episode and somehow by chance I did not tape it, I will download this episode. I will take the time to download it. But I'm going to be really wary now. I'm going to have to make sure that HBO is not trying to get me in trouble for something that they should be accepting. Now, a lot of people might not see it my way. A lot of people might see downloading episodes of a TV show as a bad thing. But I don't download every episode of a show. I really don't. I'll download one or two episodes if I have to. And if I really, really like it, I will start watching that show when it airs. Or I will tape it on my VCR. And no, it's not because of hard drive space or anything like that. I've got a brand new hard drive with plenty of space on it. It's because I want to support the show. But in order for me to get into a show, I often have to download an episode. Just the way it works. Somebody better tell HBO this. Somebody better tell all the networks that. And also, for those people who think that it cuts down on DVD sales, oh, how wrong can you be? How wrong can you be? Because a lot of the times, every time actually, in fact, this will actually be the case if they ever do release Justice League Unlimited on DVD, full seasons, I'll be getting rid of all my VCDs. I got to say that. I'll be getting rid of all my VCDs and I will be purchasing it on DVD. Family Guy. I had When You Wish Upon a Weinstein downloaded off the internet back when it was not aired because it was too controversial, as they said. But I went out and bought the DVD set because I love Family Guy and I wanted to support it. I was one of the many people who went out and bought the DVDs because I felt it was the sort of show that needed my support. Wonderfalls. When Wonderfalls got canceled, I downloaded maybe two or three episodes that did not air. And then I bought the Wonderfalls box set. And I showed all my friends Wonderfalls and they completely loved it. I would not have downloaded the entire season because how does that support a show? How does it do it? But as a sampler, it does work. So HBO, do a poll or something and figure out that you're only hurting yourself by attacking BitTorrent. It's your friend HBO, not your enemy. We watch your show, not you. You make it. Remember that. Without watchers, you got nothing. So switching over to comic books, one of my favorite subjects, and I know it's one of yours, folks. So yesterday, my best friend's girlfriend went to get herself a tattoo. And this one actually is not just directed at comic books, this is directed at geeks in general. And we were looking through the gallery of tattoos that were listed there. These were all tattoos that was done by the guy. And we came across a tattoo that made us geek out more than any other tattoo that was there. Now, I know I got you guys wondering what it is. I know it. Well, get ready for this. It was a Optimus Prime Matrix tattoo. Yeah, that is a geeky tattoo right there. It had the Autobot symbol on the left side. It had a Decepticon symbol on the right side. And right in the middle of his chest, there was a picture of the Matrix. Now, for those of you who don't know what the Matrix is, the Matrix was the special thing that was inside of Optimus Prime that made him the leader of the Transformers. I'm sure I got plenty of people scratching their heads after mentioning that. But yeah, that was the best that I saw there. And I thought to myself, what will geeks go to? What lengths will geeks go to prove to everybody that they love what they love? How far would they go? I mean, this guy obviously went really, really far. To go as far as to tattoo the Matrix on your chest. You are a devoted, devoted man. There's a guy in there who had a Wolverine tattoo as well on his left shoulder. There were a couple of spiders in there that looked like they might have been very well the Spider-Man spiders. And I've seen people, you know, cosplay as characters, but It's one thing to cosplay, but it's another thing to actually, for the rest of your life, have on your body a tattoo of the thing that you love. And this is an iHeart Mom. This is iHeart Transformers, which was just amazing to me. Now, to switch over to comics, I'm about to spoil JOA number 119, folks, okay? So this is when you actually fast forward. See, I didn't really give away too much of Corpse Bride and didn't really give away too much of Serenity. I'm going into detailed spoilers here of JOA number 119. And I'm only detailing the very end of the issue because this part of the issue will lead into directly Infinite Crisis. I mentioned in the last week's show that if you are a fan of Infinite Crisis and you really are waiting for it to happen, you have to pick up JOA number 119 because this leads directly into it. So at the end of the issue, there's Martian Manhunter, and he sees on the screen of the watchtower that Superman has come in, and he starts talking to Superman until he turns around and he realizes that it's not Superman. Now, the fact that he didn't realize until after he turned around means, oh boy, this is a good one. And a second later, spoilers, the watchtower blows up. The Justice League watchtower is completely demolished. Now, who could it have possibly been on the watchtower that made Martian Manhunter, a telepath, believe that it was actually Superman? He started talking to him and actually waited. It took him actually turning around and saying, "You," to realize it was not him. So I think to myself, who looks like Superman? Who has a red cape, first of all? Now, you might say Shazam. And I'm going to tell you you're wrong because he has a yellow cape. You might say Red Tornado. And I'm going to tell you you're wrong because he has a yellow cape. Actually, I think he has a blue one. Blue cape, by mistake. There aren't that many superheroes out there with red capes. So I'm thinking to myself, this is Infinite Crisis here. And they kept on saying that Infinite Crisis was going to be the next huge event in the history of DC Comics. And the last event in the history of DC Comics got rid of an entire universe of characters. It merged them with the other one and restarted everything. So I'm thinking to myself, what if this mysterious guy in the red cape was Superman? What if he was pre-crisis Superman? Yeah, I just got your blood boiling there. Superman. Not of Earth 1, the really, really old Superman, because I could never see him doing something like this, but the all-powerful Superman from Earth 2, the Superman that could pretty much do anything, the one that had so many powers that he was pretty much the most powerful man in the entire universe. What if it was him? Somehow driven mad from the fact that his universe no longer existed, somehow surviving. Because if anybody could survive his universe no longer existing, it is him. What if, folks? If it is, then the scope of Infinite Crisis has just gone leaps and bounds beyond what I thought it was going to go. I mean, they had said that it was going to be something huge, but I would have never expected something like that. Especially the Watchtower exploding the way it did, because that's their home. That's where the Justice League lives, pretty much. I mean, sure, they all live in their respective places, but that is where they all congregate every day. But in a way, the Justice League no longer exists. And the blowing up of the Watchtower pretty much signified that even farther. Now, scenario number two, if it's not the Earth 2 Superman, well, what if it's called Infinite Crisis because this thing is spanning the galaxies? What if this is just one evil Superman from one of the many Elseworlds out there in D.C. Because I can't get myself away from the fact that this could have very well been Superman. Obviously not ours, but a Superman. To say the least, as soon as Infinite Crisis hits the stands come Wednesday, I'm there, baby. I am picking this book up. Not only is it written and drawn by two of the best in the business, Jeff Johns and Phil Jimenez, but this thing is going to be huge. If you're a comic fan, get ready for some changes, because Infinite Crisis is going to do it. It's not House of M, because I don't really see much happening from House of M. Infinite Crisis will change the way you think about comics. It's the wind up here on GeekSpeak. Once again, the wind up is my little sports rant that I like to put at the end of GeekSpeak to remind people about my other show here on Brooklyn College Radio. So let's get into things. So hockey has begun. The National Hockey League is back, folks. For the first time since last April, we have hockey. And the Rangers actually won their first game. Wow, yay, woohoo! I certainly didn't see that coming. Because the Rangers were supposed to be terrible this year. But then I look at the rest of the league. I look at the rest of the National Hockey League, and I see that these players have not played in a year and a half, pretty much. Everybody has a clean slate. Everyone has a clean slate. Whatever you think about hockey is wrong. Whoever you think is going to be good, chances are you're wrong. Because you're going on your past assumptions here. All the experts, no matter what they say, are going on their past assumptions. Because this is a different game here, folks. They didn't just change overtime. They didn't just change ties. This is a different game. This is a game that's trying to save itself from damnation. Because if hockey does not succeed in the next 2 or 3 years, then the league might very well die. Can you imagine that? Hockey, completely gone. Well, that's what happens when you have a year and a half strike. So the Rangers might very well be a good team now, for all we know. Only time will tell. I'm ready to find out. Are you? And are you even ready for hockey with all the baseball going on? That's a good question as well. Hockey beginning now. Does anybody even notice that hockey's going on? Well, anybody who just heard me say it now knows. But how many people were actually watching hockey as opposed to the Major League playoffs, except for really devout hockey fans? Certainly a good question to ask. I know I'll be paying attention to hockey come the end of the year. But I don't know if I'll be following it all the way around. I don't know how many people actually will. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. That's the windup. Now here's the pitch. We got another hour now on on The Sporting Goods. I'd like to have another hour on GeekSpeak, but that's not the way it works. Every Monday from 2 to 4 now on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org, you will hear me, Ian Levenstein, and a bunch of others, Jason, Joey, Michael Hornstein, The Works, on The Sporting Goods. Talking sports with the best. So there you have it with that. Now, a little bit of an update here. Once again, this next week, I will not be streaming on brooklyncollegeradio.org because we will be off from school. So I will not be on the air. However, I will have a show ready on the podcast side of things. So anybody who does listen to my show, well, you will be able to listen to it at the regular time. It should be up, like always, on Thursday night. And GeekSpeak also now has an email address. So for anybody who is looking to send me questions or comments or audio comments, I'd love audio comments. Anybody who is willing to send those, you will certainly get played here on the show. And even anybody who's willing to do segments here on GeekSpeak, let me know. Send me a line. The email address is speakgeekspeak. That's speakgeekspeak at gmail.com. speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. Anybody interested in getting in touch with me or commenting on the show, go ahead and do so, because I will be more than happy to listen. So once again, I am Ian Levenstein, and you have been listening to GeekSpeak here on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Episode 3 is done, and I will see you guys next Thursday, recorded, and I'll be back live a week from this upcoming Thursday. So from here at GeekSpeak, I'll see you guys later. Take care, everybody.